And you're listening to Vectis Radio, Mark from Lifeline, and we are going to look at a feature to do with security. Afternoon, Mark. How are you?
Fine, Ian. Good to see the sunshine.
Happy. Brilliant, isn't it? You should brought in your sunglasses. It's quite bright in here.
It's fantastic, isn't it? Summer's arrived early by the looks of it.
Not seen it for a couple of days. Now, we've got this brand new feature, and obviously we're going to be giving you advice on how to protect not just your property. Today we're doing IT technology, because, of course, 30 years ago we probably wouldn't be having this conversation, but now we've got to, purely and simply because most people have got some form of IT in their house or at work.
Absolutely. As we were saying just a moment ago, actually, before we came on air, we're moving into a new era now, aren't we, where, you know, we're very, very digitally based, and just discussing a moment ago, we were saying that people born after a certain date now are called the digital generation. They don't know anything else other than the digital age now.
1985, I think they said.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, 1985. I'm thinking anybody before then, you're a dinosaur, apparently. But
yeah, that's us then.
Just move yourself a little bit closer to that microphone and introduce our guest for the next 20 minutes.
Yeah, today we've got Jonathan Thornton with us from PC Consultants. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hi there, everyone.
We thought we were going to get chocolate. We thought saw the now we thought he's going to be tight. Obviously something completely different. We were having a fascinating conversation off air, and you know, those people that obviously have technology, if to listen to Vectis Radio, you have the technology, and if you've got the technology, you are going to need some advice probably at some point. So maybe this next 20 minutes is really, really vital, so don't switch off, because you are going to get some useful tips. I've had some already. Do you want to start, Michael? I've got loads of questions.
Why not? It's first of all, you know, under this issue, or this security matters program that we're going to be running each Tuesday, first Tuesday of each month, we just want to look at various aspects of security and how people are affected by it. And we thought it would be a good one to start off this year, especially with the digital age. People may have received a lot of digital equipment maybe over the Christmas period. They're looking to use new things. And as a company, obviously, we've been used to protecting people from losing their IT equipment. And that could be an iPad. Let's say, for example, if you lost an iMac and an iPad, you could be talking anywhere between £1,500 and £2,000 that you lose potentially in a burglary. So that's obviously where we come in as a company. But as spin-offs from that, there's obviously then the data that's on those devices. How do we protect that? You know, I may lose or get broken into, and may lose my iPad, I may lose my computer or my laptop, and I ring the insurance company and they say, yeah, here's a check, have a new one. But what do I do now? How do I get all that data back that was on that? And the reason this came to light is because personally I had an issue just a month or so ago when one of the hard disks on my computers failed, and I thought I'd lost probably 80,000 photos, thousands and thousands of albums, and Jonathan is a close friend of mine, was able to recover those things. And it just got me thinking that really, if we were to lose those things, that was an accident, but if I was to lose that in a theft, where would I be able to get that information back again? I wouldn't. I would lose it forever.
It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, very.
It
very.
Really. And we are taking so much more. You mentioned 80,000 photos, and you suddenly think, wow, that's a lot of photos. But then you think, we are taking so many more photos now, because it's just easy to do. Phones, iPads, tablets, that sort of thing. And, you know, Facebook, we're always putting pictures on there of our loved ones and so on and so forth. And it's very, I would imagine it's very easy to lose the lot. And I'm sure that you're not the only one that's been in a situation where you've almost lost it. I'm sure Jonathan's got some stories to tell, but what advice would you give?
Again, it's about having your data in more than one place. If your data is just in one place, if it's on your phone, for example, and you lose that phone, then you don't have a backup. So if we take the example of phones, it's so common you go onto Facebook and you see people saying, I've lost my mobile phone, it's got all of my baby photos on there, I'm really desperate to get it back, please. And it's not about the value of the phone, they're not interested in that. It's about those photos and the bits they can't get back. So, you know, take the example of a phone. It's very easy to enable some sort of automatic backup. If you've got an Apple device, you've got iCloud. If you've got an Android device, Google has similar sort of technologies where you can have an automatic backup, so that if you lose the piece of equipment, such as a phone, you've not lost that data, and you can get it back under insurance or whatever, and you know you've got all those photos and treasured memories that you can't replace.
It's a similar sort of thing. Just say, for instance, my mum's 81. She doesn't understand the technology, but she would say, look, I've got a backup of all my photos. They're all in the loft. and by way of those funny little things that you have. But you know, these days the technology has changed. How safe are these other backups? Because obviously we've read recently that even Sony have managed to be hacked. And there was someone else that was hacked recently. I think a lot of celebrities have had their iClouds hacked and personal pictures actually put online, some saucy pictures at that. But so how safe are they? Do we make them safe?
Well, if you look at the example of Apple, which was last year when iCloud, and there was a lot of, you say, of celebrity photos that were leaked, you know, celebrities who thought data was safe because they were backing up to the cloud, and then all of a sudden hackers apparently got in and all of these photos that they thought would be private were being published all over the web. Now, Apple apparently went through the security and looked at it, and they said in most cases the method that they used to get in was through weak passwords. Celebrities had set security questions and information that they were able to scour and get the answers to, and as a result of that they were able to get into the accounts and get the data that way. So it does stress the importance of having, if you're going to store your data, having good passwords and secure passwords.
So I mean, just I'm a bit confused on how they actually try and that they can actually get your password itself. If we know a little bit about that, then maybe we'd understand on how to keep it a little bit more tricky for people to hack us. So what, how do they actually find out? Just say, for instance, I've gone onto Google and I've opened up my own Google account there. I know the password. We'll all know what the username is, because username invariably is an email address. How do I keep it safe, and how do they find out what it is? What do they actually do?
When some of those cases, it's about answering the security questions. So if you take Google or your iCloud, you can go to the system where if you forgot your password, you have to enter a selection of questions. So it might be simple things. What's my pet's name, date of birth, mother's maiden name, the sort of questions that they might be able to get information from elsewhere on the internet and work it out from there.
Right, okay. So I mean, if we have a little bit of knowledge of how those people that are going to try and break the code or whatever, if we kind of know roughly how their mind works, we can kind of be a little bit more sort of, well, hopefully one step ahead. Would that be right?
Yes, and when it comes to actually choosing your password, making sure you're choosing passwords that are secure. So some people choose to use an actual phrase as a password. So instead of just one word, they would have a phrase, maybe include some numbers in there, some special characters, you know, exclamation mark or whatever at the end, just to make it more difficult for what we call a brute force attack, where they just try and guess the password that way.
What advice would you give to people? Because obviously we now live in the password world, don't we? Because everything has got to have a password. You know, Facebook, Twitter. If you've got a phone account, you've probably got a password for that. So I would imagine we've probably got a couple of dozen passwords that we've got to remember. I mean, should you have a different password for every different thing?
Well, that's definitely the recommendation, is not to have the same password for all services, because if for whatever reason one of those services got hacked, take Sony as an example, if your password that you were using for your PlayStation was the same password you were using for your banking, for your email and so on, through that one password they've been able to get access to everything. So if you're going to use a common fast password, at least try and use a variant having a different number or something at the end, just to keep them so they are unique.
Do you ever envisage a situation where we get two steps ahead of those people that are hacking, and it's a little bit more secure, or do you think it's going to get worse in years to come?
It's going to be a constant ongoing battle, isn't it? I think when it comes to IT and security, it's always going to be the hackers get so to a certain point and you have to get ahead of it. So it's just using common sense a lot of the time.
Okay. I think one of the areas we're looking at, Ian, as well as a company, is promoting, especially to people here on the island, is security used to be considered a product. It was either an alarm, or it was CCTV, or it was something else. But security, what we're trying to develop now and encourage people, is to think of it as a culture, because that's the kind of world that we live in. We need to make sure that everything we've got is secure. We need to develop this security culture within our homes, our businesses, within our minds. We wrote an article and released it just last year called Think Like a Burglar. And it was purely and simply just telling people, you know, we think one way as a householder or as a business owner, the intruder or the burglar thinks a completely different way. So if we then start to think like they do, that would give them an insight as to, you know, what sort of things we can then do to counteract those things.
Okay, I mean, that makes perfect sense. You've almost got to become a criminal in your own mind, haven't you? Mm. Almost. Now, just say, for instance, I've got something at home. It's similar to an iCloud. It's my own cloud that sits a bit of machinery in the house. How safe is that?
At the end of the day, it's good because it protects you against a hardware failure in your main PC, for example, or your Mac at home. If there was a problem with that, then you've got a backup. What that doesn't protect you, of course, is if there's a fire or some sort of actual physical damage that destroys your backup. So that's where the importance of having a backup off-site, which is where the cloud comes into it, because it right. can be automatic. It's not in your house. It's not going to be damaged if there is a physical fire.
But what I meant by but that's good advice as well, because I'm now thinking, oh crikey, now I need a cloud somewhere else. Now I need another cloud. There'll be loads of clouds.
No, sky full of clouds.
No wonder we don't see the sun very often. We've got all these clouds about. But I'm just thinking, how safe is it? Can somebody walk by my house and like tap into the hard drive?
Well, then you're talking about things like wireless security. How secure is your wireless network? Because obviously, traditionally, to get onto a customer's network or a home, they have to physically plug into your system, plug into your router at home. But if you've got Wi-Fi at home, then that goes back to the original, how secure is your Wi-Fi password? There's various different, you know, in the old days, it used to be quite simple to actually guess a password. There was software out there that would allow people to, either if they had no security whatsoever and it was an open network, or they had earlier encryption standards that were very easy to crack. You know, within a few minutes, you could guess a password and you could be on someone's network. So again, it's making sure you're up to date with those sort of security standards.
Sure, that's terrifying, because I just, while you were talking, I'm just thinking, when I loaded the cloud up there, and obviously it's not connected, it's connected via Wi-Fi to computers. When you get another computer and say, right, I need to be able to talk to this drive, it is quite an easy process. So anybody that is outside thinking, here, I could tap into old Macca's hard drive there and steal some of his photos. I mean, they're not the ones that were on the, you know, in the news a while ago, but I mean, you know, you think, so how easy is that? And all they've got to do is just come up with a password.
Well, there will be normally two passwords in that scenario. There will be a password for your wireless network to get into your network, and then there probably will be a separate password to get into your local cloud device that you've got. So again, it goes the idea, make sure you have different passwords so that it makes it harder for anyone to come in.
So how often should you change your passwords?
Again, it depends on what. Certain sites, for example, your bank may request that you change your password on a more regular basis. And definitely from a business point of view, customers maybe have their password set to expire after 60 days, 90 days, and they're forced to change their password. Obviously, in a home environment, it's down to what sort of threat and how much data you've got and what you want to protect.
Okay, I'm known for being cynical, okay? I'm just thinking, how much emphasis do we put on trust when it comes down to the fact that, just say, bog standard, we go to Gmail, we say, right, we want to take out an account, that's what I want to call myself, that's a username, there's my password. They know about that then. Can they have access to that? And, you know, just say, for instance, in years gone by, I think it's been quite apparent that certain details have been sold off. I'm not saying passwords, but certain details have been sold off. Like, ever wonder why you get loads of calls from loads of different companies? It's because maybe the telephone company that you're with has actually sold on your details to someone else. How much of a problem would it be? I mean obviously they would be discredited so badly, you know, that nobody would ever trust them again. But when it comes down to it, it does come to the trust, because we're typing in, as soon as we type in that password, someone else knows about it.
Which again goes why it's important to have different passwords at different sites, because if you had one of those examples where either on purpose they have leaked your data or sold your data, you know, disgruntled employees, for example, might choose to sell credit card information or indeed passwords to another site. But if you've got different passwords to each site, then they can't directly get in.
No. I think this is a good area for especially subscribers locally, Ian, as well, that they choose reputable organisations that look after their security, look after their data. For example, obviously Jonathan's company, PC Consultants, is a highly reputable company. Everybody knows who they are, what they do. They're award winners, the same as ourselves, because as you said, you're rightly so, we're putting a lot of trust into those organisations. You know, we, for example, as an organisation, we have access to thousands of people's alarm systems with codes and all sorts of things. So that reputation of an organisation is very key as well. One of the other things I was going to just mention, Jonathan, as well, obviously as a company we provide a lot of CCTV and IP-based CCTV solutions. There was an issue, wasn't there, just a few months ago where that Russian website hacked into a lot of people's CCTV cameras at home, even people's baby monitors. Because they were based on an IP network. What can people do to protect themselves against that kind of thing?
Well, again, in that example, from what I read and understood, that Russian website was working on the fact that people had default passwords on their cameras. So again, they had very simple passwords on a device. It might have been password, might be admin, 1234, you know, very simple passwords. And as a result, they were scouring the web, getting all of these sites and then putting it in one easy to look at place where you could monitor all of these various cameras. And as an example, as I said, there were baby monitoring cameras that parents had got to let them look at their children, look at their babies. But because of the weak passwords, they were actually being published directly on the net. So it goes back to the example, making sure you've got passwords that are secure and you're not just leaving it at the default.
So in that instance, what's the weak link? You know, just say, for instance, you're one of those people that have had their baby monitors hacked into. What is the weak link? Is it does it come down to passwords? Or does it come down to the technology and someone on the other end of it that is really, really sneaky?
In some cases, it can be actual software exploits. So they've exploited some sort of software coding issue, and as a result, that's how they've got into the camera. But in that Russian example, it was literally just down to weak passwords. They go for the low-hanging fruit, the easy things to attack. So they look for all the cameras that had default passwords. It's very easy to do scans of networks and see what IP addresses. What comes up, it's asking for a username and password, and there will be what they call botnets that just automatically just try lots of different passwords to get in.
So, I mean, how, just say for instance, have you ever tried this yourself? You sit in the films all the time when you sit there and think, right, what's his password? And they look around and they think, right, okay, and they've got it. Do you ever put yourself in that position and play the game and just sort of, just say for instance, if you sat at my PC now, do you reckon you could work out the passwords?
It's what they call social engineering, isn't it? If you say passwords, the problem is some people choose complex passwords, but we've seen it, but then they write it down and it might be underneath their keyboard. Their password is so complex or they're forced to change it so regularly that they're having to write it down, and as a result it's written down on a piece of paper with a computer. So that can be the obvious thing, or people set password hints that make it very easy to guess what the password is. So it's, again, it's about common sense and not succumbing to that idea of social engineering, or as Mark called in the security, it's something
social compliance
where people can pretend to be somebody else. If I phone up as an IT consultant and we're a company and I ask you for your password, most of the time people will just give that password to me over the phone because they know who we are. But the same way people phone up, we have customers who have been attacked, but random people phoned them up, said there's problems with your computer, it's Microsoft on the phone, we need to log in and have a look. And it's surprising, even on the island, how many people get attacked as a result.
Do hear a number of stories.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say, just to put it into perspective, I suppose, into our language, as an alarm provider, why would you choose 1234 to be your alarm code? It's nonsensical. It's obviously it's the most obvious one that anyone's going to choose. So using that in Jonathan's world, why would you keep your password as password or admin? You've got to make it difficult so that people can't code guess. They can't think, or what would this person's password be? We have to make that. It's up to us to really raise the level, raise the bar, and say, I'm sorry, this is my secure area. This is my secure data. You are not allowed to access it, and I'm going to make it difficult for you.
I mean, it's amazing, really, because obviously, you know, 30 years ago, we had credit cards that we'd have four digits, and, you know, all of a sudden we've got all this other technology, and it's really, really moving on. And we asked a question earlier on, Mark, is how many passwords do you have? You said 24, and you think, hang on, how am I supposed to remember all that? Is someone going to come up with something that is, you know, because we've probably all got these things where we can put notes in our phones and so on, and we can write it behind the curtain or whatever, but is there something that we can do to make it easier upon ourselves to remember 24 passwords?
I think it's just the world we're living in now, isn't it? I mean, years and years ago, I don't know about you, but I used to remember people's phone numbers off pat quite easily. Very, very easily.
We had to.
Yeah. I could remember my work number, my, you know, all my contacts, all my relatives, my friends, people I phoned on a regular basis. Now, I kind of don't remember them as much. You know, I remember maybe two or three. If you ask me what my daughter's mobile number is, I haven't got a clue.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell
you. I'm the same.
So, and you purely simply, I pick up the phone and say, call my daughter, or scroll down, find my daughter, or find my wife, and I press a button and it dials it for me. So in that respect, we've adapted to the technology around us. And I think the same is going to happen in the future. We are going to adapt to the technology that we are confronted with. We have to live in a password society. We now live in a digital age. We now live in a security culture age. Everything around us, and we need to, obviously, as dinosaurs that we are now, sort of being born before 1985, yeah. We need to move on with that. We need to keep up with it, and we need to hang on to the coattails of those that are younger than us and saying, can you please help us out and keep up to date with all this modern technology?
Absolutely. I'm just picturing now you go into a bank, and if there's some kind of hold up, the shutters go up straight away. Is there, I'm sure there is there something that you have on your mobile phones, your iPads, where if it falls into the wrong hands and they do the wrong thing on it, it shuts down? I'm sure that there's something out there, isn't there?
Well, if you take the Apple example, they have the ability of what they call Find My iPhone, where if your device was stolen, you can remotely lock it. And also, when we think about security, the other thing, if you take the example of banks, quite often you've got these little devices now that you have to type in a code. So that's what they call two-factor authentication. So it's no longer just a password. It's something you know, i.e. a password, and something you have, your card that goes in the little machine and generates a number. So somebody who needs to guess the information needs to have both pieces to get into your account.
Do you know what? It's scary. But at the same time, it's kind of opens your eyes, because, you know, most of us that have the technology, we kind of, you know, we kind of understand how it works, and we know that there's a need to do certain things. And it has. It's opened my eyes, so thank you for that. I'm pretty sure that we've only just touched the surface, haven't we? Because there's so many other things that we could be talking about. So maybe you should come back again at some point. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think it's a good idea. As I say, you know, we scheduled this, to talk for 15 minutes or so, but we're really literally just only scratched the surface. We could be here for hours boring people with all our stories and ideas. But I think it'd be a good idea if Jonathan wants to come along again. You know, we'll just readdress another issue, because sure as eggs is eggs, there will be another security issue that will hit the headlines in the next few months or so. And we'll be back here again talking about how did this happen and how can we prevent it happening to us, either as domestic customers, as individuals, or as businesses locally.
Okay, thank you. But before we go, I just want to say, look, don't be scared, people at home. Don't be scared by it. It's something that you have to embrace. It's technology. It's changing all the time. Embrace it. Don't shove it under the carpet and think there's nothing you need to do. You need to be on top of it all the time, don't you?
Definitely. And then to say, if anybody wants any advice, happy to answer any questions. So give me a call, give our office a call, PC Consultants. I'm sure one of the team there would be happy to help.
What's your password? What's your phone number? What's email address? What's your web address? What's your password?
Web address is www.pcconsultants.co.uk.
Go on, do it again. I laughed over it.
www.pcconsultants.co.uk.
So don't get stressed over it. Just ask for some advice if you're really worried about it. And I mean, people, I've got a cloud. Blimey, is it hackable? Well, take some advice on it. So, again, Mark, give us some details.
Yeah, it's lifeline-security.co.uk. We're obviously working in conjunction with Jonathan. Their area of expertise is protecting that data. Area of expertise is protecting the actual physical equipment. So between us, yeah, we can certainly come up with some good solutions. Call our team on 521-621, and any of the girls, they'll be more than happy to offer them free advice or just come out and see you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll see you very soon.